So here we have Kirsty Way joining us all the way from Dorset. She is a double mini trampoline athlete.
Gymnast.
Have you ever dabbled in any other gymnastics or?
Well, I started off as a artistic gymnast. Yeah. I wouldn't really call it that because I was awful. Awful at it.
What's the difference between like normal and artistic gymnastics?
So artistic gymnastics is like the typical gymnastics everyone thinks of. So you've got floor, vault, bars, like all that kind of stuff. I was just really bad at it. And that was when I was really young. Like I can't even backward roll now, which is just like a little backwards roll on the floor. I can't do that. Like I'm so bad at artistic gymnastics. So I started off in that and then I'd moved to trampolining. Mm-hmm. And you know what trampolining is? Yep, so up and down, just on the normal trampoline. And then I did DMT, so double mini trampoline, alongside trampolining. I mean, I could go into the depths of that if you want me to, but...
No, go for it, honestly.
I was 7 when I started trampolining. Mm-hmm. And I started because my sister did it. My sister is 4 years older than me. And my mum was like, oh, Kirst, do you want to join her? And I was like... No. I said, no, I didn't want to. Like, 7-year-old me thinking I'd be all, like, mature and tell her, no, Mum, I don't want to. but no, I started. And, so I trampolined for, until I was 16. But when I was 13, I started DMT.
Yeah.
And I did trampolining and DMT alongside each other. And then, when I turned 16, 17, I like chose DMT and stuck to it.
Yeah.
And now I just dabble in trampolining at the same time. Mm.
Where did you go to first start trampolining? Was it a school club or?
Yeah, so it was just the local leisure centre. Yeah. I actually work at the local leisure centre now, thinking about it. Yeah. So where I work now, it was just like a small sports centre that did trampolining in the school hall that it was next to. Mm-hmm. And I did it there with my sister. And then apparently they noticed some potential in us after a couple weeks, so they told us to join our recreational club that was in the same hall but on a different day. So we moved over to this club that was a proper trampoline club, and I'd started there and then kind of moved my way up.
How did you find moving your way up? Were the coaches sort of nice? Because a lot of sports, I noticed that a lot of footballers say that the academy system is really awful and the coaches are quite sort of vulture-like.
Yeah, so I'd say it's so different where football is obviously there's so many people who play it.
Yeah.
So you've got to have that strict system where you find the best. Whereas for trampolining, it's such a minority sport, isn't it? Nobody does trampolining. So when I moved to this first like recreational club, it was very... very recreational, let's put it that way. It wasn't that professional. We would jump about. The coaches, but there was a mum and a daughter who ran the club, and the daughter was like always on her phone when she was coaching. But it was nice, it was fun, it was chill, there was no pressure at all. But I started getting, and so did my sister actually, we started getting a bit better. And so they were like, oh, we'll put you in for competitions. So they were a club that competed at regional competitions. And we did all right. Danielle, my sister, didn't like competing, so I did the competitions and she watched. So I carried on competing and started working my way up the regional levels. And it got to a point where they needed to hire a new coach that was qualified to kind of coach my level. There were a few other girls as well that were at a similar level as me, so they needed to hire in. He was like the GB coach at the time. He only lived down the road, so he kind of, every week he would come in and coach us. So he coached me and transitioned, like, coached me through my transition from regional to national. And that was great. So he, like I said, he came to that regional club, that recreational club, and coached. But it got to a point where that club could no longer, like, cater for me, because the trampolines weren't good enough. They weren't the newest, bounciest trampolines, and the club didn't have the money to buy them. So in the end, I had to move to my current club, which is in Poole, down in Dorset. And I moved to, it was called Olga, that's what the trampoline club's called. And it's one of the best in the country. So that's where the 2016 Olympian trains. We've got other members of the GB team there. So that's like one of the biggest clubs in the country.
Yeah.
And so I moved there.
Do you remember your first competition?
I do. Yeah. Where did I come? I came eighth out of eight.
Out of eight, okay, solid
Yeah.
start.
Yeah, so I came last, but I didn't crash or anything, because a big
Yeah.
thing in trampolining is like you normally come last because you don't complete all 10 skills of your routine, and you do
Yeah.
two routines, so all 20 skills. But I managed it. Like, we all stayed on, we all did our routines. I was just the worst one. So I came
It's a start, is it
last. It
not?
was a
I
start,
mean,
yeah. It was fun. I remember I got so confused. I didn't have a clue what was going on, because
yeah.
at the time you do two routines. You do your set routine and your voluntary routine. That's what they're called. And what you would do is you'd warm up, and then you'd get on for your, it's called a two touch or a one touch or something. And it's basically where you get one more touch before you then compete.
Yeah.
So I'd get on, I'd do my one touch, get off. The other girls would go. And then they'd be like, right, now Kirsty, you're going to compete. And bearing in mind, I was about eight at the time.
Yeah.
And I would get so confused. I'd be like, so is this the one where I'm meant to compete, or is it the next one? And they'd be like, no, Kirsty, compete. And yeah, oh, honestly, they were so confusing.
Yeah.
But no, I managed it. And yeah, I came last. But it was good fun.
That's. Did you improve on that by the next one?
Yeah, to be honest, I can't remember. I think I came third at my next one.
Oh, right.
I started
That's good.
getting the medals then,
Yeah.
but I was just scruffy. So in gymnastics, it's all about being pretty, isn't it? And
Yeah.
elegant. I'm not very elegant with my gymnastics.
Is that?
So I was more brave. So I throughout all of my trampolining, really, I was brave. So I would always have higher difficulty than the other girls, which would pay off if you landed it and if you did the whole routine. But if it was so difficult that I'd end up like falling off, then it didn't
Yeah.
pay off.
What's your favourite trick then?
Ooh, my favorite trick. So my favorite trick, I would say, is called oh, I don't know, because there's the fun ones. Like,
Yeah.
I've just learned how to do my triple backs. That's where you go like triple, and I only did that like last week, and it was really fun.
Yeah.
But then my favorite all-time skill is this. It's called a half in, half out.
All right.
And it's basically a double somersault,
Yeah.
but you do a half turn into it,
Right.
do a somersaults, and then you do a half turn out of it. And so it's all about the phasing of the twist.
Yeah.
I don't know why it's my favorite. I just really enjoy it. I think I learned that quite early on in my career, like when I started getting double somersaults.
Yeah.
That's when I learned it, and other girls struggled with it,
Oh,
but I
right.
managed it somehow, and I used to be able to do it quite well. So I think that's why I
Yeah.
like it.
That's. Oh, there's something that always just gets me with gymnastics and trampolining is like the rotation in the air. Like, it's just mad to me how the momentum just.
I think it's weird how you know where you are. So you've got that like kinesthetic awareness where
Yeah.
you know exactly where you are in the air. You know on the takeoff whether you've put enough rotation in.
Yeah.
If you're not going to get round, you then have to adjust like your shape. If you tuck in tighter, you know you're going to spin faster.
Yeah.
But it all happens in the space of what, 1.5 seconds? And there's so much you have to take in, from just literally the takeoff to your rotation. Like, there's so much you have to think about, but your brain does it automatically.
Yeah.
So people always say to me, how do you know where you are in the air? It's like, well, I don't really, but my
Yeah.
body knows. I don't know, but my body does it for me.
Yeah. So it's sort of like muscle memory
Yeah, for
type
sure.
beat. It's just mad to me where the just the momentum just comes from, if that makes sense. Because you're not holding on to anything, you're just
No.
in midair. It's not
Yeah.
like you're spinning yourself on like a
Yeah.
table or something like
There's
that.
more, like, people don't quite realize how you get the rotation. Like, it's all through, the feet drive. So pushing your feet forwards, or maybe, I mean, good technique, you wouldn't push your hips forward. But there's got to
Yeah.
be that bit of hip push in order to just generate the rotation, because otherwise,
Yeah.
you just can go up and down.
Yeah. That's something that I learned when I did my first front flip.
Yes. Very good.
Didn't get much further after that, to be fair. It's sort of, there's not much rhyme or reason to it when I do it. It's like I'm
Just
gonna throw myself into this and hope.
I was gonna say tuck and hope.
Yeah. Sometimes I'll, rotate and I'll land on my feet. Sometimes I'll rotate and I'll land on my feet, and then I'll have too much speed and I'll just like that, just
Yep.
straight face onto the ground. And then sometimes I just don't even land on my feet, and it's just like
Under.
just straight slap onto the ground and belly flop.
You've got to get that, like I said, the kinesthetic awareness, and just the more you do, obviously, the better you'll get at it, and then you'll be more used to it. Because right now, for me, a front somersault, or a front flip, whatever you want to call it, like, that doesn't, it's nothing, really, because you've done so many over the years, that it just, you know exactly where you are in the air, and I could land it pretty much every time.
Yeah, that was something, because this was back, sort of, like, let's say 2015,
mm-hmm.
when, like, I don't know if you remember, all of those trampoline parks started popping up.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and so it was all the craze to be able to do stuff on a trampoline, and that was sort of the wave that I was riding at that point. Like,
I want to go to the 13-year-old
me. Yeah. So it was sort of like, with that, I learned how to front flip, mm-hmm. and then also started learning how to backflip. It was all from YouTube videos, to be quite honest. It's not like it was anything crazy.
Yeah.
Because I remember they basically told me to do a backwards roll,
mm-hmm.
To, like, get used to the rotation. Yeah,
getting used to going over your head and that.
Yeah. And then it went from that to sort of bouncing onto your back.
Yeah.
And then rolling out of it like that. But it was the end, like, sort of product that I could never get down. I always sort of, like...
I mean, that's brave, to be fair, to learn it from a YouTube video, because...
Oh, really?
If you turned up to, like, a trampoline session...
Yeah.
If I was to teach you a back somersault, I would hand support you. So I'd get your hand, and I would just...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, mainly with little kids, because you are a bit taller than me. So it'd be a bit more difficult. But, like, little child, I would just hand support them and just flip them over.
Yeah.
And then they get used to it that way. So for you to actually be brave enough to do it on your own is quite impressive.
Wow. I'll give myself a pat on the back.
Yeah, give
wow. I didn't realise it was any good, to be honest. I remember it was... The end product, though, there was a lot of rotating maybe halfway and then landing on my neck.
Yep.
Which... You know,
not ideal. Hurts.
It did hurt a lot.
Yeah.
Like, especially in, like, just a garden trampoline. There was no one, absolutely no one supervising me at all. Like,
landing on your neck is so common, though. It's horrible.
Yeah.
I remember I was 17 and I did a skill and I landed straight down onto my neck.
Oof.
And it really hurt. And I think I trapped a nerve or something. I can still, like, oh, I can feel it now. And I had my driving test the next day.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so I was there, and you know, you're driving, you've got to check your blind spots. So I looked over one shoulder, it was fine. And then looking over the next one, and you can't quite.
Yeah.
can't quite do it. But if I told my instructor that I couldn't do it, then he wouldn't have let me take my test.
Did you pass?
I did.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well done.
Barely. It was by the skin of my teeth, definitely.
Oh, really?
Oh, absolutely.
I do.
Yeah.
We'll get in a car with you.
I wouldn't either, honestly. To be honest, though, it was a lot of trial and error.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that sort of, you know, is very common.
Yeah, I suppose it's common when you're not at a trampoline club.
Yeah.
I would say. Like, my coach, or one of my coaches... He started trampolining, like, got on a trampoline for the first time when he was 21, I think. And he worked his way up to Great Britain for DMT, like, so he got all the way up. But like you, he just taught himself.
Yeah.
So he taught himself how to back somersault, and then he watched another YouTube video and learned how to add a twist and all of this. And so then he got, obviously, a bit higher up, and he had to be taught skills properly. But, so it shows you can do it.
Yeah.
Coaching yourself.
Don't, though.
Not me personally.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't personally take any of this information and do anything with it.
Anyone listening at home, don't do it.
Honestly, it is the last thing I would do again because it's growing up, I've lost that edge, and I've got this air of caution about me now.
Oh.
Because I have to pay bills.
Yeah.
Apparently that's what's changed me into this, like,
into an adult.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, when you see those dogs that are, like, massive dogs, but they're really scared of everything.
Oh, you're
I
that
feel
one.
Like one of those, yeah, because I'm just scared of everything now. I could never do what I used to do on trampolines at, like, the age of 13 now.
Yeah. Well, go to a tramp park again. They've got the big soft pit, like the foam pit, and you can just throw whatever into that. Again, with caution.
They do scare me. There was one called... No, it's still around, actually. It was called Flip Out.
Yeah.
Near Chester. It was, like, the biggest one in the UK. It was, like... They made a proper doozy of it at the time. Like, I just remember it being the best. And to be honest, they had a mixture. They had these really long trampolines. They had ones going up the wall, the standard ones on the floor and whatnot. But they also had these sort of basket woven sort of ones as well. They're much more professional looking.
Oh,
And
yeah, like a
yeah,
proper webbed
sort of,
trampoline, yeah.
yeah, exactly like that. And those ones were the ones that would go into the foam pit because you can get much more height on
Height,
those.
yeah.
I don't know how they work because it's a
It's all
mystery
to
to
do
me.
with like the width of the webbing. I mean, this
Oh,
hits me
right.
with my rubbish trampoline knowledge. I don't know how they work, I just get on them and bounce.
Yeah.
But like, the thicker the webbing, or like the smaller the hole, I don't know, the less bouncy they are. There's a
Oh,
lot in
right.
it, but I don't understand.
Yeah, because those ones that we would use in sort of clubs and stuff are very. They look like you could, if you came down too hard on them, your foot would slip through or something like that. They were very sort of ominous. I don't know. They just look very scary, to be quite honest. They're
Yeah,
not
you
like a
can't be scared
normal.
of it. That's the
Can't be.
main rule of trampolining, you
Yeah.
can't be scared.
How did you get over that sort of?
I think I've always been lucky, and I've been that, like I said, the one that always threw the big skills, and I've been the
Yeah.
brave one. I think I'm more scared now than I was
Yeah.
as a kid. So learning a new skill, like I said, I learned like the triple back the other day, and my coach has to take me through such a journey
Yeah.
in order to get me to like be confident enough to take off and to do it. Whereas when you're younger, you don't know what's
Yeah.
like the worst that could happen, so you just throw it and
Yeah.
see what happens, and then you land it and you go, oh, that was good.
Yeah.
Whereas now I think, oh, what if I land on this like part of my body, what if I injure myself, and you go through all this thought process, and then you finally get around to doing it, and it's like, oh, it was fine.
Yeah. I guess now as well, you think more about your career as well. You think about those injuries and those, what those could do to you for your career and things like that. Because if you landed on something, like your neck, then it can severely, injure yourself, even in a foam pit.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I don't know about airbags or anything like that.
We don't tend to use them. That's what like aerial skiers use, don't they?
Yeah.
And they come down onto the air. Oh, that would scare me. I don't know why.
An airbag.
Yeah.
They're all right. I remember using one at another trampoline park in Cheshire.
Right, yeah.
It was like you'd land on it and then you sort of like get swallowed
Yeah,
like into the
straight through,
side
yeah.
and you get stuck down there or something like that. The foam as well, it was just they were really hard to get out of. Use more energy just getting out of it.
You really do. We used to have it as like conditioning at the end of a session
Yeah.
because we have quite a long foam pit at my club. So we'd finish a session and then coach would be like, right, 10 laps of the foam pit. You just have to go
Oh,
up
right.
and down the foam pit, and oh my goodness, it's so like it hurts your legs, it hurts your arms, it
Oh.
hurts your lungs. Sounds awful, but it's good for you.
That's like a tough mudder thing,
It is.
like
Oh yeah, it really
climbing all
is.
over those cubes. Oh, they are awful.
I mean, they used to be just like, I don't know what you've been in, but the foam would be so old and crumbly that you'd get foam everywhere.
Yeah.
But now we're quite lucky that you've got the foam in little like socks kind of thing.
All right.
So the foam's all contained in like some fabric, so you don't get foam everywhere. But honestly, you'd go in, you'd be wearing a pair of socks, and they'd come out just covered in foam pit.
Yeah.
And that was the end of that pair of socks. You just have to go in the bin.
I don't like the texture of it. It
It's
was
a bit
like a
gross.
really awful texture. Also, there's stuff that like, because my only experience is from trampoline parks, and I'm bringing them up quite a lot. But I don't know. It seemed that people would jump into them and then take a bite out of the foam. It was very weird.
Sweaty feet that have been on that foam. Oh.
Yeah, it was really awful. Health and safety nightmare, to be quite
Yeah,
honest.
not
Like,
COVID safe. Actually,
no.
that's not true because apparently, like, research has now been done into foam pits, and apparently they're like one of the safest places for, I don't know why and how
Yeah.
that works, but we're allowed to use them at training now because research has been done, and apparently they're safe and bacteria free or whatever it is. I don't know, virus free.
Even then, I'd rather stand like
Yeah, just.
in a sewer than in a foam pit. Like, I'd be
Oh.
more comfortable in a sewer.
Oh.
It's such an icky feeling of just like, it's
Yeah.
not a nice material,
No,
really.
it's not.
It's
It's,
like,
yeah. Crumbly old foam.
yeah. So, sort of when you're training, do you do a lot of double mini trampoline in training, or do you just use one?
So as in what, one trampoline?
Yeah, so if you're getting to know a trick or something like that, because obviously if you're putting it into a routine, you're going to use both
Yeah.
trampolines.
So it varies. So you very rarely learn a skill, like for the first time, on the double mini trampoline, on the DMT. So you would usually learn it on a normal trampoline, like one of those Olympic sized trampolines, or you'd learn it in the pit, or very rarely you'd learn it in a rig. Like, have you seen those harnesses? People
Oh,
like you got a
right.
rig around you,
I know what you
yeah,
mean.
when you're younger you tend to learn like your first double somersault in a rig.
I know those, and they have them at fairgrounds and
Yeah,
stuff.
that kind of thing. The fairground ones make you go like really high, whereas the ones
I
that
used to love those.
I've never been in one,
Oh,
actually. No,
really?
I've never been in one of
They're
those
good
ones.
fun.
Yeah,
I mean,
not
not when you're an
when
adult, because you're a bit of a
you're an
weirdo,
adult. But
but
they
they
are
are
good
good
fun
fun
if
if
you're
you're a
a child.
child. Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, try it as an adult. I'm sure you'd still enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, you'd like around six other children,
Yeah, that's probably not
it
anymore.
would look a bit
Might not
odd.
fit in the harness.
Oh God, yeah, that's another thing you've got to consider, I guess.
But no, with with a skill. So on the double mini trampoline, you've got, they call it a mount. So I don't know if you can picture a double mini trampoline, but
I can.
you've got good. So you've got this sloped trampoline, which is called the mount, and then you've got the top, which is called the spotter. So there's three different kinds of skills you can do. You can either run up to the DMT and go straight into a mount skill, which is where you run up, you hit the first like slope trampoline, and you go straight into your somersault, and you hit the spotter, and then you do your dismount. So you do two skills. Or you can do a spotter skill, where you run up, you hit the first trampoline, and you do a straight jump onto the spotter, and then you do your skill, and then you do your dismount. There's like different, we have different training sessions. So I'll walk into training and my coach will be like, "Oh, today we're working mounts, or today we're working dismounts." I don't do spotters anymore because you kind of transition out of them. You don't, nobody wants to do a spotter. Like, I hate spotters. So you get rid of them as much as you can. I think there's, when you do that jump on, like the straight jump, there's more room for error. Where, like, if you jump too far or you don't jump far enough, so you're trying to eliminate them as soon as you can. But yeah, so learning a skill, you would do it on the trampoline, like the normal trampoline, or you do it down pit, and then you would go and put it straight onto the DMT and do it as a mount, or you do it as a dismount.
So
So
with the
with the
spotter,
spotter,
do
you
you
just
just
sort
sort
of
of like
like
land
land
on
on
a
a
mat
mat
and
and
then
then
that's
that's
it?
it?
Yeah, so if you're like learning it for the first time, you would have the mat pushed in. So we've got like little safety push-in mats that they hold by the trampoline. So if you're, I mean, I still use them now, even if I'm not learning a skill. Like every time I'm just doing mounts, my coach will push the mat in and I'll land it on the mat. So the mat always comes in, it's just safety. It kills the bed a bit as well. So when, if you're not linking and you're not putting a dismount off your mount, then just put the mat in and it kind of kills the bounce a bit. So it makes it easier for you.
So how do you sort of control the momentum coming out of a trick or skill, pardon me?
Oh. Ooh. To be honest, you don't. It's actually a really good question, and I don't know the proper answer to it. So do you mean like when you're linking and going into your second skill kind of thing?
Well, yeah, if you were
Yeah.
to do a spot a trick or skill, if you sort of, because there's a lot of speed with it, how do you not say you were doing a triple back somersault or whatever, you've got a lot of speed, like there's not much time to do it, and then you land, how do you make sure that you don't just land and then fall onto your bum?
Sometimes you can't help it. It happens. But I guess, so normally it's usual that you'll go forwards first. So you'll run up because obviously you're running forwards. So you'd go from the mount, you would do your forward skill. And then you're already, from your run up, you've got the momentum and like the adrenaline, but the momentum that automatically like transitions you and pushes you forwards onto the flat trampoline, the spotter. And then I don't know, you just jump out of it and you go into the next one. There's so much you have to think about, or not really think about because it happens naturally, but if you let your tummy go loose, then your hips slide forwards and you like gain it. It's called gaining it, where you go backwards but you move forwards. So it's like, yeah, you know what I
I've seen
mean?
those,
Yeah. So if your tummy goes loose, then you lose body tension and then it can go anywhere. So you've got to make sure that you're in control of the trampoline. The trampoline's not in control of you.
Yeah.
It's quite silly. Yeah. So you've got to stay strong and just let the trampoline push you up into the second sky.
I know that feeling of being controlled by the trampoline. Yep. I don't know if you're familiar, but like when you've got maybe two or three friends would be on a trampoline and then they all jump.
And they kip you.
And then you just sort of fly up.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, that's a good game to be fair. Dangerous game, but it's fun.
Yeah, I've very nearly flown over a whole net and like into the garden after doing that. It's really dangerous.
It's very dangerous.
But so it's that sort of feeling of like
you don't have control.
Yeah, like I'm just sort of flying at this point. Yeah. Like there's nothing really you can do about it, which is a very scary feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want to be sort of in that situation. Yeah. So how do you sort of? Because I know a lot of people when they sort of. Tell me about doing tricks or skills and things like that, because I watch a lot of slope style mountain biking.
Okay.
And they talk about when they're rotating around, they look like over their shoulder and they spot the landing, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So I guess the difference with the mountain biking and then trampolining is you've got more time. Yeah. So head position is a big thing. So if your head's like flying out over here, it's not good.
Yeah.
You need your head at most times to be like tucked in, kind of giving yourself a double chin. Yeah. Like that's good head position. In order to initiate a twist, it's all through like maybe dipping the shoulder or moving the arm rather than like looking over your head.
Yeah.
But you do spot the landing, you do that by finishing your twist and then coming down to land. Like you don't want to be twisting into the landing because that's when the injuries happen. Imagine like coming full high and then twisting as you're hitting the mat. Your knee's gonna go.
That's when you bring all the momentum and land flat on your bum.
Yeah,
sort of
that kind of thing. Okay. Yeah, so it's all about finishing your twist early enough so that you can then watch it down and just
float down,
spot the landing by just keeping your head in line and not moving it around or whatever.
Yeah. So what's the protocol after you've finished the routine?
Oh, so you stick the landing.
Yeah.
You try to stick the landing. And then you wait for 3 seconds, but it's got to be 3 seconds, otherwise you get deducted. So you kind of wait for 5. Because when you're competing and you land, you're like, 1, 2, 3. And then you're like, present. But no, you've got to be there 3 seconds. And then you turn to the judges and you give them a big present and a smile.
Yeah.
And then, you're done.
And that's it.
And then you go again.
Over in a matter of seconds.
4 or 5 seconds. And then, that's for DMT at least. And you have... So you have the qualification rounds or the preliminaries. Mm-hmm. And you do 2 routines. Although I'm saying this now, it's all changing next year. But I don't understand the new code yet. I haven't got my head around that. But at the moment, you do 2... routines or 2 passes is what we call them. Mm-hmm. And then if you make the final, you then go through to the final and you do another 2.
Yeah. Okay. So one of our athletes is actually going to Cirque du Soleil.
Mm-hmm.
What do you sort of think about that walk of gymnastics, I guess?
I think it's an incredible experience to go to. Yeah. Not that I've done it, but from what I've heard, so many gymnasts go into Cirque du Soleil because, I mean, why wouldn't you? If you've finished competing and your career is kind of over in that sense, but you still love the sport, it's a great way to keep going. If your body lets you, some athletes unfortunately have to quit or retire because of injury, or some are just ready to stop, but they're not ready to give up the sport. So going into Cirque is an amazing way to not only carry on doing the sport, but you also get to travel, you learn like how to perform in a different aspect, like all our careers we've spent performing to impress judges. Whereas then you move to Cirque and I'm imagining you're performing to impress an audience. So you learn so many different things.
Yeah.
I think it would be an incredible opportunity, but it's a lot of work. And you've got to be really disciplined, which you do anyway for gymnastics, but I can imagine it's tough. But worth it when you get like that round of applause at the end of your performance or something.
Yeah.
No, it looks good.
I can imagine it's quite... The element of showmanship and it's like much higher.
Yeah.
Because in gymnastics, it is all about sort of being perfect, really. And like with the sort of like spread your arms out or whatever, like, and give them a big smile once you're finished and things like that. But it's in front of a crowd. You don't do that present at the end of it. It's more about what you do in the routine.
You get some gymnasts that aren't really like extravagant. I want to use say extravagant, but I don't know what a better word is. So especially in, so say in artistic, you've got to have, for girls, you've got to have that element of, you know, showmanship when you're showing off on the floor. Whereas for my sport, there's no crowd pleasing. You're only there to please the judges. So you run up, you do your skill pretty or whatever, and then you land, and you don't have to smile. You don't have to be all like crowd friendly.
Yeah.
You can just be in the zone, you know, you can just be straight faced. So in order to then transition maybe to showman, like being a showman, like that could be a really difficult transition. And I think that's why some gymnasts probably don't go into it, because they haven't had that like confidence to be, I don't even know what the word is, but you know what I mean? Whereas
flagrant.
But I feel like I'd love it. I'd love being there in front of everyone and just showing off. It's like my cup of tea.
Yeah.
Completely.
So, I mean, there are other walks you can go down. You can coach. I mean, you know, Danny Purvis, one of our other athletes, he's got a club now. There's so many different things you can do.
I know.
A lot of options.
I want to stay in the sport. I know that. Somehow. Coaching, I really enjoy it and I respect, obviously, big time. Like, coaches are so, so important.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's for me. I've got my coaching qualification and I dabble in it here and there, but I'm only a level one, so I coach like the diddlies, little babies. And so, yeah, I can coach, but I don't think it's what I'm going to go into. I don't know how I'm going to stay in the sport, either through, like, Cirque, or when I go off into my, like, other career, I'll probably, like, send my kids to gymnastics and help their club or something. I don't know. But, yeah, I don't think coaching is my full-time career. It will be. And who knows? It might be.
You've got to be very patient with coaching.
Yeah.
Like, I know that not a lot of people could coach me. Like, I'm not a very, let's say, I could not pick up on the gymnastic skills very quickly.
Really?
Yeah.
Slow burner, what we would call you.
I'm a very sloppy person.
Sloppy. Everyone's different, though. Like, some gymnasts are slow burners, is what we call them. That, like, they take forever to learn a skill and they have to perfect it before they can change like a slight part of it. And you get some that will just get up and do it straight away, and maybe it is a bit sloppy, like me. But then you have to learn to correct it. So there's, you'd get different types of learners, just like you do in every sport. Or, and then you get, so for gymnastics especially, you've got like visual people and is it kinesthetic? I guess, like feelers. Some people spot and they look for cues on the trampoline, or maybe not the ceiling, that's not ideal. Mm-hmm. But like they look for things and where they are in the air, whereas I'm more of a feeler, so I like feel where I am in the air. It feels, it sounds a bit odd, but my coach will be like, oh, did you see that? And I say, no, but I felt it. That
you
kind
got,
of
like,
thing.
A spidey sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Whereas other people can't feel, but they can see.
It's like a sixth sense, like where you are, you know, just like generally.
Yeah. Yeah. So it is really odd. And some people, you shouldn't, but some people like close their eyes when they do a skill, which is not ideal. They try and coach you out of that. But yeah, that means they're probably feelers, because they don't need their eyes in order to know where they are.
Yeah. That's such an odd, like, sort of thing to get your head around.
I know, isn't it? You don't think so about it.
Yeah, having that sixth sense and, like, fantastic awareness.
Yeah.
Like, do you reckon you could, like, catch something that had been thrown at you from behind or something?
We play with that sometimes.
Oh,
like,
really?
We'll be flying, if you're having a fun session, like, we'll be flying through the air doing a somersault and someone will, like, throw a piece of pit at you, a piece of foam at you, and you have to catch it. And it's really difficult.
Okay.
But no, that is good fun. I like doing that.
Fun sessions.
Fun sessions, yeah. They exist.
Yeah. I guess, I mean, with gymnastics, it's very inclusive. Like, is what I've realised. Anyone can really get into it.
Oh, for sure. I think it's a really important sport to get into, because it teaches you so much. Like, not only does it teach you, you know, flexibility, coordination, but it also teaches you, like, discipline and being around such varied people. I don't know how I mean by that, but I just, there's so many different characters in the sport that I think it really teaches you so many life lessons other than just the sport itself. And I would say, like, gymnastics has made me the person I am, where it's taught me to just express myself and be, you know, out there and be confident and not be afraid. And they're all things that I can apply to every aspect of life, not just the sport.
Yeah.
And I think that's quite cool.
I definitely think the discipline and just being able to, like, the coordination and knowing when to, you know, and how to present yourself is, like, a really good life skill.
Yeah.
And it's just flexibility. It's good to just keep it.
Yeah.
Like,
the sport is still changing as well. Like, there's always, like, if you go back, I don't know, 50 years, maybe not that long, I'm not sure how long, but gymnasts were typically tiny and really, like, petite but pretty in the air, whereas now you see the artistic gymnasts and they're, like, huge muscles, which is what, you, like, they're strong. But also in the sense of gymnastics is all tiny leotards and tight clothing, and girls have now turned around, like, at recent championships and been like, I don't want all my body out, kind of thing. Yeah. And so they now have, like, leotards that cover all their body. Mm. I think that's great. Like, it's showing that the sport is adapting to what girls and boys want.
Yeah.
I think that's so cool.
Yeah, well, I mean, you mentioned before that there's a new rule change.
Yeah, yeah.
Introduced, so it's good to be a part of something that's always evolving, especially with times like these that are very forward-thinking. It's
with my sport, with DMT, where it is such a up-and-coming sport. I was speaking to someone the other day who had never heard of it, which most people haven't.
Yeah.
And they were thinking, so you're kind of like the pioneer of the sport, and you could look back in 50 years where it's changed so much, maybe it's in the Olympics, who knows, and be like, I was one of the first people that did that.
Yeah.
I thought that'd be amazing.
That is cool, to be fair.
Yeah.
Do you think that at any point soon or ever it will become an Olympic sport?
No.
No.
It's so difficult because it's such a crowd pleasing sport. Like, everyone who watches it will say, like, that's sick, that's awesome.
Yeah,
and it's so high speed and there's so much adrenaline. And now where the sport's pushing forwards, you've got people doing these massive skills like quadruple somersaults that you don't see in any other gymnastic discipline. But then there's also, it's always had this, like, negative connotation where it's for people who are a bit scruffier and they're not quite as pretty in the air, so they, like, throw big skills and they always crash, and, like, and there's people have that, like, negative perception, like I said, and I don't know whether it's still too negative to then be moved into the Olympics. I think if another gymnastics discipline's going in, it'll be tumbling. Which, do you know tumbling?
Yeah.
I think Jay Paddock is one of your gymnasts or athletes, I think.
Yeah, I've seen videos of him.
And he's a tumbler, like, and that's also a crowd-pleasing sport, but it's also so pretty and it lasts a bit longer, so I think that's probably what would go in before DMT, but who knows?
Hopefully
it would, that would be amazing.
Realistically, every single discipline should be in. I mean, some of them aren't big enough, or, you know, they don't have that sort of reach, have that many athletes competing from all over the world, really, but I mean,
yeah, that's one of the things, is having enough representation in every country. And I think it's gradually getting there. Like, each year you see a new country at the World Championships, but it's not quite big enough yet that it could go in the Olympics. But 50 years time, maybe.
Don't know where it's going, really. But I mean, this is the thing with it, because it's a sort of ever-evolving sport, and especially with, it's easier to get people on board with crowd-pleasing sports.
Yeah,
it's because they see it and they're like, oh, well, I want to do that.
Yeah,
that looks great. Like, I would, if I could sort of do anything near the, like, I'd absolutely love it. I'd eat it up.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
if I could just do a backflip on the flat ground, I'd be doing it every day. I'd get out of bed and I just
do one.
Exactly, yeah. You know.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Absolutely no thought put to the people that are living underneath me at all, you know. I absolutely love it.
High on your ceiling. Oh, yeah, it was worth it.
Exactly, that's it, though.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so much easier to recruit people.
Yeah.
Because a lot of we got a freestyle kayaker, which is like another sort of small up and coming discipline of a much larger sport. So a lot of that that Otty is putting the time into is getting the word out there about it, because this is there's a lot of people, they see it and they're like, oh, well, that's a thing. And it's getting that sort of to people, because that's another crowd pleasing sport. It's about doing
I think that's what a lot of sport is about now. It's just crowd pleasing and what people want to watch. Because every sport needs some sort of skill and bravery or whatever it is. So every sport can be appreciated in that sense, and it takes a lot of training. But then it's what people want to watch, which is what really matters to quite a lot of people.
Yeah, that is true, but I mean, sort of disproving that snooker pool.
No one really wants to watch. Well, people watch it. I mean, my parents watch it all the time. I don't understand it. Well, I understand the sport, but
I like playing it. It's fun enough in like a
yeah, it's just not a
family setting.
spectator sport, really, is it?
No, but then again, darts should not be a spectator sport, but it
It
seems like
definitely is,
one
isn't
of the
it?
most fun things to watch. I think that's more the crowd though, really. Football should not be a spectator sport. I was actually putting my mind to this the other day. It's the weirdest thing. Like,
Really?
oh yeah, like think about it, like 100-odd thousand people sat in a circle
Watching
watching
people
22 other people run around on a field.
kicking a ball around.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, you're pulling it down though. No one
Just a
watches
bit.
anyone. Yeah. But honestly, it is a really weird thing to think about. It's like we sort of frown upon like that sort of gladiator, like, and then we watch UFC happily. How does that work?
The cool thing is, though, is most of the time when people are watching a sport, they're watching and respecting it and then thinking, I wish I could do that. And that's quite cool, knowing that you're the person that people not want to be, but they want to be able to do what you can do. And that's a nice feeling.
But that's sort of what Sports for Champions aspires to be. It aspires to be that inspiration towards the gateway to starting, because it's much more personal. You see, like, you see a famous footballer on the TV, they score a fantastic goal. Sort of, you watch Harry Kane in the Euros, you watch him win a match. You see that. You see the sort of prestige in it, and you think, I want to do
I
that.
want to do it. How do I do it?
Exactly, but with having an athlete like yourself go into a school, you speak to them and you get a much better view of how you get into it, because a lot of people don't really know how anyone's got started within their sort of their sport.
Whether they you then realize, oh, it's that easy, I could do it too.
You don't, it's all, we put a lot of emphasis on the hardships as well and the pressure and things like that, because it's not all sunshine and rainbows, really, is it? You might get injured, you might, it's
I know a lot about injuries.
no, really.
I've had a fair few.
Which one was the worst?
I say I've had a few. I went so long throughout my career with none. I was so lucky, and everyone was really not jealous, but they would be so happy that I wasn't injured. And then I had knee surgery back in 2018, but that was fine. It was just like a meniscus tear, cartilage. And then last, it was in 2019, 2019. I did something bad at a world championships, and I ended up. I've got the scars for it now, but the ruptured three ligaments and had like muscle displacement. So my calf muscle kind of like twanged the other side of my ankle bone, and it shouldn't have done that. So I had to have surgery for that. So that's quite a bad one. But yeah, I like to do it like big injuries. I'm gonna do it, but it's just the
Doesn't sound
sport.
very nice, that, I'm not gonna lie. I can't get my head around that. That's like giving me like,
I don't want to put people off
well,
the
it, you've got to disclaim things, haven't you? Because at the end of the day, you're doing somersaults, you're flying into the air,
It is a
things
dangerous
happen.
sport, but
You know.
you feel like you're flying, so that's quite nice.
Exactly, yeah. I've seen the photos. It's really like there's a photo that you sent us where you're just upside down, and it's like, wow.
When you think about it, it's a bit mad that you're like, what? 10 foot in the air and you're just upside down.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it takes a lot to get to that point, though.
Yeah.
So it's not like, oh, you could just get on a trampoline and do it, or like run at a double mini trampoline and just, do what you do. You can't, it takes a lot of discipline, a lot of training.
It's just bizarre to think that you're running at a, like full pelt at a stationary object and it could fly you in whatever direction it wants. Yeah.
There's also a lot of work that goes in behind the scenes as well. Not just, the work never stops for athletes. You get home, you've got to have dinner,
Yeah.
you've got to do all these different things. It's like,
Put all the recovery in, you've got to go to the
exactly.
gym, you then got to work on your education alongside it. So for my sport in particular, where it's not funded, we have to work hard, especially as we're getting older, on what we're going to do after we retire. Because there's that transition for all athletes, really, of when you retire, you have this like withdrawal from the sport, and you need to figure out what you're going to do for the rest of your life because you spent so far all your life doing your sport. So yeah, where we don't have that option for it to be our full-time career, we need to work on our degrees or qualifications outside of training, and it's kind of juggling two lifestyles. You're like dual career, that's what we called it at uni, where you're an athlete and you're a student,
Oh, right, yeah.
and you gotta balance the both of them.
Is it difficult to sort of live alongside being an athlete?
Yeah, I'd say you have to sacrifice a lot. There's a lot of
Oh.
sacrifice when you're an athlete, but you're sacrificing it for the right reasons. So social life, for example, you sacrifice that quite a bit, but then you get your social life at training. And some sports I've noticed over the years that they're very individual sports, and like tennis, for example, you've got one at one end of the court and the other at the end, other end, and you're not talking. Whereas for my sport, all we do is talk. Like when you're not jumping, you're mucking around somewhere and having a laugh. So you don't get the social life with your friends at home, where you can't go out like partying and all this kind of stuff. But you get it at training, where you've got all your friends that love the same sport for you, as you, and you've all got the same goals. So you can bond over that and have fun over that. So sacrifice, but then it's a good sacrifice.
I mean, it forces you to live in the right way though as well, because I know a lot of people, including myself, I'm very, very partial to eating rubbish. Like,
We all are.
yeah, no, it's good as a treat, in moderation, but
Yeah.
never.
I'm quite lucky where gymnastics is typically very strict on the diet and really low body fat percentage and all of that kind of stuff. But I don't know, I control what I eat and I let myself have what I want. Because I know that I could, if you have it in moderation, it's fine. So my diet, I wouldn't say, is as strict as what you would expect, like a GB gymnast to be. But that's because I'm not there stuffing my face with cakes every day. But I have one if I want one, or and then you just eat healthy the rest of the time. So it's having that balance of I need to enjoy myself, but I also need to respect that I am an athlete.
Do you cook for yourself?
Yeah, well, when I was at uni, yeah, but now I'm back home and dad cooks for me a bit more.
Oh, really?
Quite lucky.
What's your favourite meal to have then?
Oh, I love pasta. Just
Oh.
pasta with a tomato sauce and like some chicken and a few bits of veg. Like, it's boring, but I love it.
No, that is completely fair. I like
Yeah.
pasta's good, it's just very, it's a
It is a
carb.
carb.
Like, that's the only way to explain
It
why I
fills you
eat
up.
that.
Yeah.
Can't have too much of it because it'll.
But then it's important that you have them, especially, with any sport, but gymnastics in particular, there's always that stigma of can't have carbs, when really they're so important. You need them to fuel your training. How are you expected to get through a 4-hour training session and you haven't eaten any carbs all day because you're afraid of them? Whereas you need them, they're fuel.
Yeah, a lot of people are doing this sort of diet I don't know if you know it, called like
keto diet, yeah.
yeah, where you sort of cut out all carbs and then you just, instead of burning the glucose for
Glucose, you're
energy,
burning like
burn
fat and
complete fat,
yeah.
and that's it for energy, which it's a shortcut to
It's
sort
not
of,
sustainable though, is
it's
it?
not, no, because you end up proper pale and like,
And then you do it for
yeah.
like your 6 weeks or whatever you're doing it for, and then you can't carry it on after that. You're like, oh, okay, I'm done now. I've lost the weight and I go
Yeah.
back to carbs and I put it all back on again.
Exactly, yeah, it's not, it's sort of like you just gotta cut for ages. It's, the thing is, when you start cutting out carbs, you realize how many things have carbs in them, and then it's like this, it's like getting hit by a train, because even things that you don't think have carbs in them,
They all do.
they start having carbs in them
Yeah.
all of a sudden, you're like, what?
Yeah, which is why that diet makes no sense to me, because you're cutting out so many foods that you
Yeah.
need, and you end up just eating kind of like
Meat.
meat and avocados.
Yeah, that's basically it.
Don't even know, there's probably carbs and avocados, I don't even know.
No,
There you go
carbs.
then.
That's the thing though, you can have a fry up. Proper fry. I mean, you'd be missing some things. Toast. How could you miss out on toast? Exactly, yeah, like you miss out on some things, but you can have bacon, which is like, strikes me as really weird, to be quite honest, because you
Baked
look at
bean
it, like, if I were gonna say, if someone came to me like, what's the healthier food, bread or bacon, I'd be like, well, obviously the bread,
bread, yeah.
like it makes no sense to me. I mean, it's a bit of a extreme diet though,
Yeah, I
like.
think there's the difference though. You've got athletes who typically like eat healthy, they know what's good food, and if
Yeah.
they're a sponsored athlete, they're always going to be sponsored by the healthier foods. And then you get celebrities who are there made to promote all these silly diets, and there's a reason that someone like a professional athlete isn't going to be promoting that diet, and it's because
Yeah.
it's not the healthiest way to do it. But you get celebrities doing it because they're not typically the healthiest. I'm generalizing here, but
Yeah.
their career isn't focused on their health and their like ability to train, so they're there promoting all these bad diets. It's like,
Yeah.
no, stop telling kids to do that.
Celebrities being influencers,
Yeah,
I'm
that's yeah,
assuming, yeah, like
influencers.
sort of the fitness influencers that you see.
Yeah.
Because their life revolves. Oh, God, it's gonna sound bad. Their life revolves more around vanity than actual performance.
Achievement. Ooh, should we say that?
Doesn't really matter, I can, you know. It is sort of like that though, isn't it? Like,
Sometimes, yeah.
I mean, I heard about keto through an influencer, and I was like, oh, that sounds interesting.
I mean, it's scientifically backed up. It works, and people do it. But then, are you going to get an athlete
No,
on a
not at
keto
all.
diet? No.
Because it's more important to have a well-rounded and balanced diet than it is to have just like cut something out just so you can burn the fat,
Burn the
like.
fat, but you need the energy, and energy is what you need to be an athlete. So,
Yeah.
carbs.
What's the most important thing in your diet?
Ooh, I'm a bit weird when it comes to food, and
Yeah.
I don't enjoy eating. I don't know why. Like, I do it, so I eat to train, and I eat in order to have energy. I mean,
Yeah.
sometimes you like indulge because you like the taste of something, but my main thing is eating so that I'm not too drained for training. That's my most important part, which is bizarre, and people are like, what?
Yeah.
But yeah, like, food is just not my favorite thing in the world. So just eat when I have to. So I eat breakfast, dinner, and lunch and dinner, whatever,
Yeah.
and yeah, and then
Your
snack.
breakfast really is important, as people say.
Breakfast, yeah. Oh, breakfast is my favorite.
Oh,
Bowl
really?
of Weetabix in the morning with some banana. Oh, I look forward to that.
I'm not a big fan of breakfast personally.
Really? Yeah, people skip it, and it's.
I skip it. Well, I say I skip it. I have maybe two pieces of fruit in work each day. But my issue with breakfast is that the Western world turned it into a dessert, and it really annoyed me. Like, we should not be eating waffles or pancakes or some of the cereals. Why would you have cookies in
Cookies for breakfast,
like
yeah.
a bowl of milk? Like, that was my main issue with it. It turned from, this is just the energy you need to kickstart your day, and it turned into this like treat, and it was like I couldn't
That's
really
so
go.
true. I've not thought about that.
Yeah,
That
like
is so true.
I was walking through Tesco's the other day with a friend, and we were just walking because we were actually getting some like food to eat for the evening, and we saw these Puricy cinnamon churros.
Ooh,
And
yeah.
that you're meant to eat with chocolate milk for breakfast,
Oh
which
my
is like
God, all the sugar.
exactly it's like pastry coated in sugar, and then you're supposed to eat it with chocolate milk. It's absolutely insane to me.
I can't even imagine that would taste nice.
Yeah, they're churros, it would taste nice.
That's true. Chocolate milk, my favourite, one of my favourites.
Yeah, chocolate milk is good, but that was the thing that puts me off breakfast. Mm-hmm. It's not, it's just not, it's turns into something different.
I think it's easier if in your head you're like, right, I'm going to eat healthy. It's easier to eat healthier for the first half of the day than it is the second half, because the second half of the day is when the cravings, for me at least, when the cravings come in.
Oh yeah, easily.
So
I don't even want to eat food in the morning. Like, I don't feel like it at all. I just force myself to have two pieces of fruit.
Usually you need them.
Yeah, well, I know I need them. Five a day is pretty important.
Eat your five a day, kids.
Yeah. It's hard. It's so hard to have five different pieces of fruit.
Well then.
Yeah, but how many different
yeah.
pieces of fruit do you have in your house?
Yeah.
We keep apples, bananas, grapes, and that's three.
That's three,
that's
yeah. But
three
then have,
pieces
like,
of fruit.
Carrot and cucumber and you're sorted.
I forget that the vegetables count as well.
Because
yeah.
ideally you want more veg than you want fruit, because the fruit's so high in the sugar.
Yeah,
but then you can't be afraid of fruit.
Yeah, fruit is very sweet, isn't it? It's
I always have banana for breakfast with my Weetabix, and then I love strawberries and mango. That's what I normally have. And then just veg.
Strawberries, mangoes, well, things like that. They're like desserts as well.
Yeah,
like,
but healthy desserts.
Yeah, well, maybe with like a bit of yogurt or something like that. That's my only issue with it, to be honest. I look at them and I'm like, oh, this, you know, why would you have strawberries and sugar for breakfast? It's, you know,
yeah,
you just
a bit of sugar on top,
wash out. It's because I just heard someone trying.
What? You wash your hands.
You just brush your teeth.
Yeah.
Why would you want to have? Why would you want to have something like that?
Yeah.
Breakfast?
Do you brush your teeth before breakfast? No, I was going to say
I
that's...
can't. No. Well, no, technically I do.
Do you?
Well, because I brush... I don't come into work and...
So you have... Yeah, I suppose you have breakfast at work. Oh, no, I can't leave the house unless I've had breakfast.
I have a very strict routine. I don't know whether I'm just sloppy and lazy or I work by thin margins. I prefer the latter.
Yeah, go for that one.
Because I wake up... Every morning, wake up, cold shower, brush teeth, and then basically just leave the house. Yeah, because I usually prepare dinner beforehand. So it's like, wake up, shower, teeth, go. Oh, get dressed as well. That's a pretty
important one. That's an
important
one. That is, yeah.
Yeah, that is one that I tend to do. That, and then I get to work and then usually don't eat until about 11. So I like to not.
Oh, I can't do that.
Oh, really?
No.
It's so difficult. That last hour is, like, pain.
Yeah. But why do you not just eat earlier?
I'm fasting.
You're fasting?
No, honestly, I don't eat, like, between 7 and 11. Nothing.
Really?
Yeah.
But then do you drink coffee?
No, I don't drink coffee at all. I don't drink coffee or tea.
No, neither. I drink tea every now and then, but not coffee.
The only instance I would drink tea in, I think, was if I were in Japan. Because it's culture there, isn't it? So... If I were like, because they're very strict about it, so it's like.
I don't know. Have you been to Japan?
No, I'd like to though. It seems very. Yeah, I don't think I'd fit in though.
No, I didn't. I wouldn't go back there.
Oh really?
Nothing against Japan, but I'm a country bumpkin.
Yeah.
And going to somewhere like Japan, where it's such city vibes.
Yeah.
It wasn't for me.
I'm much more into cities personally.
Yeah.
Like. The hustle bustle of it.
No.
Like. I just, there's a lot of routine in Japan. I think I'm a very loud person for them. I don't think they like me.
What, in this countryside?
No, just in Japan.
In Japan, yeah.
Because you hear those like horror stories where they're like, these Americans came and they were just acting like Americans.
That was like us. We went for a competition. It was in 2019 where I did my ankle.
Oh, right.
And we'd go on, I think it was the metro or basically the underground train.
Yeah.
And we didn't realise until about halfway through the trip that you're meant to be silent on the trains.
Oh, really?
So we'd get on and we're like half the GB team. There's probably, well, probably about 10 of us. And we're like being loud and mucking around and all of this stuff. And then it wasn't until halfway through that we realised it was cultural norm to sit there in silence. And we were like, whoops.
You must have really been hated by a lot of people.
Well, just, you know, how loud we can all be. And, yeah, you're not meant to do that.
There's massive...
Yeah.
Even in this country. Do you do a lot of, like, surfing or anything?
Yeah, I love going surfing.
Oh, really?
Surfing. We go down to Devon or Cornwall. Mm-hmm. My favourite. Oh, I love going for surfing.
Yeah. I've never... In fact, I've done it once in Australia on the... I think it's called the Great Ocean Road. Mm-hmm. They're like, there's this beach and it was famous for having absolutely massive waves. And to be fair, I mean, I was like, what, 11 at the time? Mm-hmm. So they were massive to me. I don't know if they wouldn't be crazy now, but I did it once there. I couldn't stand up. It was awful. Cool. It was like, sort of like, hugged the board like that and like, just rode a wave and that was it. Yeah. Not like going like sideways. Essentially, yeah, just sort of went forwards, just straight, hugging for my dear life. Like, it was a really scary experience. Not the scariest, though.
Not scary.
Oh, Australia was crazy. For an 11-year-old.
I can imagine.
I was actually in the water, sort of just paddling. There was a basking shark.
Oh.
Not, like, not 10 metres away from me, travelling towards me.
Ah.
Yeah. And, like... With the people there, the locals, they weren't sort of, they weren't fazed because they were like, they knew what it was. They were like, oh, that's normal here. Oh, but there was a shark swimming towards an 11-year-old.
Oh, no.
It is scary to think about. I didn't know it was happening because I was coming back to it. So. Yeah. But definitely.
Down where we live, I've got a seal. There's a seal.
Oh, really?
Sammy the seal. And we could be, like, paddleboarding out in the sea.
Mm.
And he'll just get on the back of your paddleboard.
Oh, that's nice. Is he big, or does he, like, sink?
Yeah, he does throw you off.
Yeah.
Like, fly. But, yeah, he's just Sammy the seal. He's on his own. And he just comes along. He'll just sit on the shore. It's really cute.
I'd be mad at him for, like, if he chucked me in.
Yeah, it's not ideal.
Yeah. Do you do a lot of like water-based sports? So.
Yeah, I love it. Anything water-based. So. Yeah. I'm actually a really unconfident swimmer.
Oh, right.
So put me in a swimming pool and I'm like... But anything like paddleboarding, surfing, kayaking. I love learning how to wakeboard, which is where your like feet are on boards or a board and you're like pulled along behind a boat or on a rail.
I don't know if it was wakeboarding. I went on a cruise that had like a... Mm-hmm. It just sort of shot water. But it wasn't like... That's hard to explain. It was like the... I don't know how to explain it. It was like really... It wasn't smooth water or anything like that. It was like proper rough.
Yeah.
And you just sort of stood on a board.
Uh-huh.
And it was like... I think it was wakeboarding.
And you have to hold on to something.
No, you didn't have to hold on to anything. It was like surfing.
Oh, fun. Like skateboarding, but on waves.
There are some really, really... really funny videos of people like on those machines because it's just a solid like to explain it like imagine the material that a slide is made out of and you just sort of fall on it and it's really difficult because there's like high pressure that's what I was looking for. It's like a load of high pressure water being shot up this like wave shape like that and then you just stand on a board like
going down. That sounds difficult.
No, it is, because you like if you fall off, you get... Because it's such high pressure,
you
get flung up the wave.
Yeah.
Like, it pushes you up. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's like...
No, I love it.
Funny ride
pass. Have you ever been ring-going? Which is where you sit in, like, a rubber ring, and then you get pulled along behind a boat.
I've not heard of that.
Oh, that's so much
fun. It sounds quite good.
Oh.
Been on like the slides.
But imagine that, but then just being pulled along by a rope and a boat, and you just ran the sea.
I couldn't do that. See, that could easily turn into a life of pie situation. I don't like the thought of that. That's my issue a bit. We're off topic.
We are.
How can I loop this back? So, enough about ring going and water sports in general. Sort of getting into gymnastics.
Mm-hmm.
What was your first like memory of it, if that makes sense? What was the first thing they introduced you to?
Ooh, I can't remember. So like gymnastics in general, like artistic when I was a baby.
Yeah, just the first thing that you were sort of indoctrinated into.
I always remember I was in first school.
Yeah.
It would be like year one, year two, and I'd been doing gymnastics. And we did, like, the school display at the summer fair.
Oh, yeah.
And we all had, like, little bunny outfits on. And we had this routine. And I don't even remember learning it. But it just went horrendously wrong. And we had all the parents watching us. And this girl cartwheeled the wrong way. Like, we were all meant to cartwheel in sync. And she cartwheeled into me.
Oh,
and then we all just went, like, tumbling down. Like, oh, my, it was quite funny. But that's, like, my first memory of gymnastics, I would say.
Do they sort of start you off, like, when you first go into training? Do they start you off on, like, the presentation of things?
Ooh, I don't know. So if I was to coach a beginner on a trampoline, you just get them used to the trampoline itself. Just so you don't even blow their mind with the thought of competing and how to be pretty. It's literally just learn that this is a trampoline and how to control it. Jump up and down, it's not as easy as it looks. Like I do a lot of kind of school visits, so schools will come in and I'll teach them how to trampoline.
Oh, right.
And they just fly about, and some of them are so powerful and talented because they've got a garden trampoline and they jump really high and it's really impressive, but then their limbs are flying all over the place. It's like they haven't got control of their arms and legs because it's such a powerful piece of equipment that it flies you up, and you've just never felt anything like that sensation before. So yeah, it's learning how to control the trampoline. That is step one.
And then sort of what's after that?
So you learn basic skills and then link them or whatever, something. Like, I don't know. It really depends on the gymnasts themselves and how quick at learning they are.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the time you'll be given a beginner's group, but you can identify the slightly more like natural gymnasts and they'll progress at different speeds. But it's whether or not you progress them all at different speeds or you try and keep them all quite similar so like they all stay motivated. It's quite difficult, really.
Oh, right.
Like judging how to coach a group opposed to like just judging how to coach a gymnast individually. I haven't got loads of coaching experience, but that's just what I've figured out in my small amount of coaching that I've done.
Yeah. So when would you like expect them to be ready to sort of take on a somersault or like rotations generally?
Yeah, well, a lot of kids have already done it. Oh, I've done a flip on my garden trampoline. Yeah, like you get that every session. It's like, okay, well, do you want to show me? And they do it and they like have awful technique and they fly onto their face and you're like, okay, we'll leave it there. It's kind of, you would be ready when they have control over the trampoline. They are aware of like how their body moves. Mm-hmm. And then you just kind of hand support them, like holding your hand, flip them over, and you just move it straight in. You can do it quite soon, but it is, you don't just let them do it. You have to hand support or something like that and gradually ease them off the hand support so they have the correct technique rather than just flipping and hope for the best.
Yeah. Would you say it's easier to front somersault or back somersault?
Back somersault.
Really?
And everyone's so amazed by that.
Yeah.
But every gymnast really will say it, because front somersaults is what you would call a blind landing.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, so you've heard of that. So you go, so you take off going forwards, and then you're coming over the top, and you can't see the landing.
You just sort of land.
Yeah, and it just landed for the first. Whereas a back somersault, it's sighted the whole way. So you can kind of see the trampoline the whole way round. So that's why a back somersault's easier.
Yeah, that's sort of how I mean, with that said, I always felt it was easy to rotate forwards.
It's what you learn first. But then you won't see any trampolinist now doing like a double front somersault. You'd always add a half twist on, or a full twist, or not full twist, one and a half twist, because that blind landing is horrible.
Yeah.
Like, if you're jumping full height and you've got a blind landing coming down, it's not going to end well.
Yeah.
So you add a half twist, you add a 1.5 twist, something
just so
like
you
that.
You can have, like, that...
That little, sighting, yeah, of the trampoline on the way down.
A little breather to sort of, like, and then see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's still amazing. I mean, to be quite honest, like, I could never do it.
Yeah.
I literally could never do it. Like.
You could.
I fear it's too late now.
But then that's such a big thing where people are like, oh, I didn't start young enough. But like I said earlier, my coach started at 21 and he got up to world-class level. And one of the girls on the team with me now, Ruth, she's, I think, oh, she's going to kill me if I get this wrong, but it's something like 28 or something.
Yeah.
And she didn't start until she was early 20s.
Oh, right.
And she's now, again, like GB team. So
that's
you can get into it at any age.
Yeah. So what would you say to new people that are starting out?
Be brave.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be afraid to fall, because you're going to fall.
Yeah.
And just, listen to the coach, because as much as you might not think so, they do know best, which I've learned the hard way.
Okay, so if we were going to tune in to watch some double mini trampoline, where would we go to watch it?
Ooh. That's a great question. YouTube's your best bet.
Yeah.
Just typing in DMT, double mini trampoline, and you'll get some of the most incredible passes you've ever seen from Russians, Americans, all of that. If you wanted to watch it live, you'd have to wait for an event, which at the moment are obviously very rare, but we have our British Championships in, I want to say Liverpool, but it might be Birmingham this year.
Right.
And if anyone's open to go and watch, then... Yeah, they're usually live streamed, but sometimes I've been on the BBC before, and sometimes they're just on like live links on the website. So.
Oh, right. Is it at all like streamed to YouTube or?
I think so. It varies for the event.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of international competitions, they'll stream through YouTube, and some will do it through external websites, and some don't stream it at all.
Oh, really?
Which is really annoying.
Oh, yeah, that's not very helpful, is it? So, with that, you can watch, sort of like the. Are there any, like, younger brackets, or is it just senior, and that's it?
No, there's younger, so if you're talking at, like, an international level, you've got juniors.
Yeah.
So at Europeans, you have under-17s category, or at World Championships, you've got all ages, so you've got kind of 11 to 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17-plus.
Yeah.
So you've got all age groups, and then just at regional or, like, national level, or recreational level, anyone can do it.
Oh, right,
anyone can do the sport at whatever ability you can, like, you've got to start somewhere.
So
it's really inclusive, really open, anyone can do it.
Okay, and so finally, just the last one, do you have sort of like a mantra or like life, just how do I say it, like maybe a quote or something that you've read that you live by?
There's two that's come to mind. So my main... Oh, I've got three.
Okay.
So my main one that I live by for life is everything happens for a reason.
Yeah.
So I love that because I think it's so true. If something goes wrong and you think it's the end of the world, it's happened for a reason. And then what was my other one? So my coach always said to me when I was younger, you need to work as hard off the trampoline as you do on the trampoline. So by that she means you need to be really disciplined with your conditioning and your strength work in order to, if you get strong here, then you're going to get strong on the trampoline. And then my final quote, which I think is really important for me, is there's always another competition. So you know, if something goes wrong at a competition, or you wanted to go and do really well and it just didn't happen for you, there's always going to be another one. And someone said that to me once and it stuck with me, and I always say it to anyone who's competing, especially if it's gone wrong, there's always another competition.
Okay. So thank you for joining me.
Right, thank you for having me.
Thank you for tuning in to the Sports Champions podcast. We hope to see you next time.
Bye.